Well, joining me this morning to help us understand more about the issues surrounding the use of feeding tubes for the end stage of dementia is Dr. Sharon Brangman. She's a professor of medicine and the division chief of geriatrics for Upstate Medical University. She's also the past president of the American Geriatric Society and currently the director of the Central New York Alzheimer's Disease Assistance Center. Welcome, Dr. Brangman. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for inviting me.
End-of-life decisions are very challenging, but this one is a particularly so, I think. Tell us what the concern is.
Well, the concern is that toward the end of Alzheimer's disease, people lose their ability to chew and swallow and eat. And food is such an important symbol in most cultures and certainly in our culture for taking care of someone and loving someone. And so it's very hard when a loved one stops eating to know what's the best approach to take.
So when you're thinking about somebody who otherwise is functioning or able to locomote, like they're not necessarily bedridden, what does the patient look like?
Well, generally at this stage, the person isn't walking very well. They're probably bedridden and they need help getting out of bed. They may not be talking very much, maybe a few words at a time. Sometimes they recognize family, but maybe they don't. They usually don't have control of their bowels or their bladder, and they're starting to lose weight.
So the issue here really is something like the notion of putting someone on life support, like oxygen or an NG tube or something in other circumstances. Here you're talking about basically keeping them alive by putting in a feeding tube.
Exactly. So what do we do when we see somebody starting that downhill course, which is often indicated by losing weight and not being able to eat? And there's been a number of concerns about how do we use feeding tubes in these situations in patients who we know are starting that downhill course.
You say concerns, so there are ethical concerns here as well as professional concerns.
There's professional concerns because we know that it's very easy to put the tube in. It's a very simple procedure. It's often done right at the bedside with some local anesthesia. So on the short term, it's fairly easy to do. But on the long term, there are a number of complications, and with ongoing research, we're starting to question whether we're causing more harm than good by inserting feeding tubes into older patients.
So what goes into the decision? First of all, who makes these decisions? Obviously, it's got to be the team. I mean, both family and the physicians who are taking care of this person. Let's start with that. Generally, what have you seen?
Well, this generally happens in patients who haven't made their wishes known ahead of time. So patients who have told their family in advance or written it out whether or not they would want to have a feeding tube or other forms of treatment toward the end of their disease process gives us a clear course. It's the ones who haven't made that decision, and then families, usually alerted by doctors or nurses, that this person isn't eating, they're losing weight, they may be getting dehydrated. We know that physiologically, in terms of how the body is functioning, there are little signals that are starting to turn off organ function. So the brain isn't working very well, and the kidneys may start to slow down. And also the ability to understand what food is for and to eat is starting to change. So we find it very common for people to start to pocket food in their mouth. They may chew and then never swallow, or they may put food in their mouth and not know what to do with it. Or if they do swallow, they may start coughing because food starts to go down the wrong way and into the lungs.
So exactly. I mean, I'm trying to understand also from kind of a psycho-emotional point of view, what goes into the decision on the family side? I mean, what are some of the issues that you see that people struggle with?
So families are very concerned that if they don't do something, their mother or their father will starve to death or become so dehydrated and it will be very painful and they would feel very guilty about that.
So you're seeing it's like mom fed me. How can I deny mom food?
How can I deny mom food? Because food has such an important emotional tug in this culture. So what we have to do as physicians is to help educate families on what happens in the end stages of Alzheimer's disease or when an older person is very frail. And we know that sometimes when we try to introduce food and fluids to a body that's starting that downhill process, we actually can make that person uncomfortable. They can get nauseous or sick to their stomach and get cramps. They can get diarrhea.
So in some ways, you're suggesting that by intervening in this way, you may be sustaining life in the short term, but you're creating more problems?
Exactly. There's been a number of studies that showed that we get to the same endpoint in almost the same amount of time, whether we add a feeding tube or not.
So in other words, it doesn't forestall death.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't postpone the end result, which is someone passing away, and it might actually make them worse in the short run. So, for example, we think that a feeding tube can reverse malnutrition, and we know that's not true because the body may be starting to shut down so that liquid isn't getting absorbed, and instead the person may get diarrhea.
That's interesting. So even though you're giving food, the body is not ready to receive it.
Exactly.
Or is refusing to receive it.
Exactly. So it's not getting absorbed, and so that even though we're going through the process of giving them nutrition, it's not really getting to that target and making them better.
Why then, where does the pressure come from to make this decision? In other words, is that information readily given to the family, for example, that this cannot necessarily prolong life and also can cause problems?
I don't think it's universally given. And I don't know if families are ready to hear it, because this is often a very emotional time in a disease process. And if we see someone losing weight and not eating, we want to do everything we can to reverse that and make them better.
So that's been obviously your experience. Makes it very, very tough. What other adverse effects have you noticed or do you know of with tube feeding?
Well, just the process of inserting the tube into the stomach wall can give you local irritation. Some of the
infection, I would think.
Infection. Some of the acid from the stomach can leak out and damage the skin. The tube can get blocked. The tube can get displaced and cause more damage. And it doesn't reduce the concern about food or fluids backing up from the stomach and getting into the lungs.
It doesn't reduce it.
It does not reduce it. There's also new studies that suggest it may speed up the process of skin breakdown or the creation of bed sores, for example. So there's a lot of things that we may be doing, thinking that we're helping, but we may be making the situation more uncomfortable and distressful.
With the growth, with the aging of our population and the more people potentially developing something like Alzheimer's, is there a growing awareness of the potential, you know, detrimental effects of using these tubes?
I think we're on the very beginning stages of helping families understand what it looks like at the end stages when somebody is older, whether they have other medical problems or if they have the final stages of Alzheimer's disease. I think we have to help families understand this, and it's a very emotional time, so it can be difficult. So it may be helpful to talk about this before you're in the middle of an emotional decision-making process.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because I think that's crucial. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Dr. Brangman right after this break. So please stay with us.